Blog Talk Radio.
All right, I got a couple of things here for you. Good morning. It's the 25th of July, man. We're just tearing through this month and grateful. We are. We should all be grateful of the rain we're getting, which could continue on today. Last night we got a flood warning, which came from the El Paso region. But what I have learned is that if there's a flood warning, there's no rain. But if there isn't, I mean, the very worst storm that we had, which was like a month and a half ago, there was no flood warnings for that one. So anyway, I've got a couple questions for you, and I can't believe I didn't ever think about asking this before. Was Jesus a conservative? Now think about this, or was he a liberal? Or do the terms even apply? Christianity, he was God on earth, Protestantism and Catholicism. In Islam, he was the second greatest prophet. In Hinduism, he is an enlightened being. He is certainly beyond a guru. So we're talking billions of people, maybe 3 billion people out there that consider him to have the highest value. So a very important person in history. Was Jesus a conservative or a liberal? 5-2-3-14-50. I think I forgot my text machine today. But here is what's going on out there. There is a battle right now, and you might not be able to believe this. Trump's number one backer, Jeff Sessions, is teetering on the verge of being replaced. Donald Trump is asking people what that would look like. What would be the effect? And so, well, this is how I see it. The current Russia investigation is way out of line. It's going way too far. And I believe that Mueller has come up with a plan, or somebody gave him the plan, to take the investigation farther than it should go, to try to provoke Trump into firing him so that they can try to impeach him. Or if nobody does that, if he's not impeached, then they'll find stuff. They'll eventually find something. You know, everybody has a little bit of dirt on them. By the way, Blog Talk Radio, Kelly O'Connell, future home of broadcasts, current home of broadcasts. I've got something like 1,000 shows there in the can, if you want to go through. Go and listen. But so that's what's going on with Mueller. And it's an all Democrat. It's all partisan. Mueller doesn't care. His best friend is James Comey. Everybody hates Trump. Everybody thinks they're doing the Lord's work by trying to politically assassinate Trump, get rid of him, send him to the sidelines. In the meantime, Jeff Sessions did something that was very ill-advised. He immediately offered to step aside for the Russian investigation. Very frustrating to Trump. He did it without asking Trump's opinion. Once again, if you're working for someone, you want to check with them, right? You have an employee. I mean, this idea that these people are all independent decision makers. Were they independent decision makers under Obama? Of course not. So you can criticize everything that Trump does, but he was not wrong in expecting to, or wanting his head of his Justice Department, Attorney General, to let him know if he planned to recuse himself and why. So he steps down. Then the bureaucracy takes over. Rod Rosenstein appoints Mueller. A very, very, very bad decision. So, now Trump is thinking about getting rid of Sessions because he feels let down by him. Now, I've got a great little clip here that sums everything up for you. I'm going to play it for you in a second, but I'm just letting you know how I kind of analyze this. So Trump's in the situation where, number one, Jeff Sessions has let him down. He's asking when he's going to go investigate Hillary. All right, let me comment on that as well for you and get your opinion on it. I believe that the Department of Justice should investigate Hillary and Barack Obama for the stuff that's come up. Some pressure back on the left and let them know, let them be reminded what it feels like. And also, people were upset that nothing ever happened to Hillary. It doesn't mean anything has to happen, but if there was a finding in an investigation, then that would make people feel better. And Barack Obama did a lot of stuff to try to sabotage Trump, So, do an investigation of those guys. Doesn't have to be high profile. And in the meantime, replace Sessions with somebody else. Get him to resign. Well, you know, what I would do is give him a lateral move. Put him in another key position. And, or make him an ambassador to, some country that he wants to, whatever he wants, you know. But Sessions has become a curse because he's not able to do what he was originally supposed to. All right, here's my clip from Dick Morris, and I think he sums it up well. You can call back 523-1450 and tell me what you think of this, but I thought this was good analysis. From yesterday, Dick Morris, former advisor to presidents such as the irrepressible and very Randy. No, Randy means, don't you? It's not a guy's name only. It also means highly sexed. Bill Clinton.
Trump has got to get rid of Jeff Sessions, and I think he should appoint Rudy Giuliani as the attorney general. Sessions, who's a fine man and would have stood up and been a good attorney general, totally emasculated himself during the confirmation process. Number one, by saying that he would have to recuse himself from the central thing before his office, which was the Trump-Russia investigation. And number two, by saying that he would recuse himself from the other topic, which was investigating Hillary Clinton, because he said he was so partisan during the election that he didn't think he could be fair. So he's like a crocodile that pulled all of his teeth. He's got absolutely no power. He can't protect Trump. He can't really discharge the fundamentally major duties of his office. So get rid of him. I mean, give him some other nice appointment, but not attorney general. And bring on an attorney general who's going to really fight for Donald Trump with credibility, with national popularity, Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani is adored throughout the country. And while the hard left hates him because he lowered the crime rate in New York and used stop and frisk as a method of doing it, he can stand up to Mueller and really fight him on even terms. Rudy used to be a prosecutor and used to be the very high up in the whole Justice Department anti-corruption scheme, bureaucracy. And he really is a tremendously credible person. Who can really stand up there and fight Mueller on even terms. And popularity, Giuliani versus Mueller, it was Giuliani who was there at 9/11, not Mueller. And he could win that fight. And Trump needs to understand that this is fundamentally a political fight, not a judicial one. This is Donald Trump against Robert Mueller. And if Trump can name Giuliani almost as his vice president in that fight, and his spokesman, then he really is going to be in much better shape. Trump has got to go back on the offensive on this thing, and this would be a great way to do it. You know, on August 15th, my wife and I have a new book coming out called Rogue Spooks, The Intelligence War on Donald Trump.
All right, so that's the analysis that I think is good. So Donald Trump could say to Jeff Sessions, I want you to leave, but please fire Mueller on your way out and appoint somebody else. There's so many different ways you can play this. In the situation that the Democrats are in, is they've always been able to pull the levers of power, whether in power or in the minority. They've always been able to pull their dirty tricks, and nobody tends to stand up to him. And so you've got Trump who's willing to stand up to him, but I don't think that he is really putting out all of the defense that he could. All right, so take a little break here. 523-1450 and Kelly O'Connell 616. Delighted to be hanging out with you this early morning. It's real nice out there. We shall be right back. James Taylor up on the roof live.
When this whole world starts getting me down, and people are just too much for me to face, I'll climb way up to the top of the stairs, and all my cares just give right in space.
So how will future generations look back at this time? Will they blame Trump? Will they pick up the narrative now? And I think part of the question is the future going to be liberal or conservative? Or is the world going to end, as some people believe? But I was asking earlier, was Jesus a conservative or a liberal? Well, what difference does it make? You might say, well, it's kind of an interesting question, is it not? Now, here's on the conservative side, he comes and represents the Old Testament. He conserves the law. He says, I didn't come to destroy the law, but fulfill it. He restates the Ten Commandments at the Sermon on the Mount. On the other hand, he comes and he attacks and goes to the very root of the authority of the elites of the day, the religious, the Sadducees and the Pharisees, and is an existential threat to their existence. And you could argue that because of his actions, the entire state is later destroyed. I don't know if I told you this. I think I did. There was this guy named, I'll have to look up, I try to remember his first name. His last name was Cockbar. And he was a person who came along, rebellion against the, I think it was, Daniel Cockbar, Judah Cockbar, something like that. Jonah, something like that. So this guy comes along. He was big. He was very strong, charismatic, well-spoken, and he got a lot of people behind him. And then they took on the Roman army and fought for quite a while. He put a large army together, and the Romans finally got sick of this going on and completely wiped him out. So I think that was in AD 123. He was the guy that Jesus was supposed to be, a one-man wrecking crew, who seemed and looked messianic, they said that he could pick up a tree and pull it out of the ground, roots and all. So obviously physically very imposing. And he was a rebel, a radical. He took on the establishment, and because of that rebellion, the Jews lost their homeland for 2,000 years. So that's what the Jews were looking for back then. So into an argument for why Jeff Sessions should stay. And here's from Newt Gingrich.
Weigh in on all of this tonight, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, author of the number one best-selling book, the New York Times bestseller list, also a Fox News contributor. Newt, good evening. Good to see you tonight.
It's good to see you.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, we've been through a lot of discussion about Jeff Sessions, first of all, and the president has made sort of a couple, you know, not so subtle digs at him over the course of today. So let's start there. Do you think that his days are numbered?
No, I'd be very surprised. Look, Sessions was the first senator to endorse Trump. I remember the very first meeting Calista and I went to, which Don McGahn hosted, but Jeff Sessions chaired it when almost no one was for Trump in Washington. Sessions stayed with Trump when he was 10 points behind during the whole taping of the conversation, you know, about sex and all that stuff. Jeff Sessions has been loyal all the way through. You can make a good case he shouldn't have recused himself. The president certainly feels that way. But when you look at Jeff's overall contribution, when you look at the work they're doing cooperating with Homeland Security on rolling up MS-13 gangs all over America, you look at what Jeff is doing taking on sanctuary cities and the liberal mayors who refuse to protect their citizens from criminals, there's a lot of good in Jeff Sessions. And I think it would be a big mistake for the president to in any way do anything except move forward with him.
You wrote a book called Understanding Trump. And, you know, when you look at him saying things like our beleaguered AG and then talking to the Boy Scouts about how important loyalty is. And, you know, his daughter-in-law spoke to us and basically said, you know, look, loyalty is the main factor here. And he clearly feels that Jeff Sessions threw him under the bus when he recused.
Right. I think he thinks Jeff Sessions made a huge mistake. And I think he believes as a result of that, he's in this enormous fight with Mueller that it would not probably have existed. So he's got a strong case there. On the other hand, I would just point out loyalty is a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a point here where people have to say, the guy was with you from the very beginning and he makes one big mistake.
I hear you.
Do you really dump him? And if you do, what signal do you send to everybody else on the team?
So talk to me about the sort of changing vibe, for lack of a better word, at the White House. You've got Sean Spicer out, Anthony Scaramucci in. There's discussions about maybe Rudy Giuliani, although he shot those down a bit today, and perhaps you coming into a more sort of outside role, inside role. Are you going to take a bigger role in this administration in any way?
Look, I'm going to try to be helpful in ways that the president finds useful. I'm focused very much now on getting a tax cut bill passed and signed in.
All right, so that's the answer there, is this basically a battle over Jeff Sessions right now. So the question is he going to get rid of Sessions? I'm kind of convinced right there by what Gingrich says. You know, you don't turn on the person who had your back number one. But here's a tweet.
The United States made a new statement this morning in just the last few minutes where he takes aim again at his own administration and his own attorney general. I will read it to you out loud. So why aren't the committees and investigators and, of course, our beleaguered AG looking into crooked Hillary's crimes and Russia relations?
He basically says, you know, our AG under attack.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm the one doing the attacking. If I were Jeff Sessions and I saw that, I would not take that as a huge vote of confidence from the president of the United States. He's calling his own attorney general beleaguered and then saying, why aren't you doing your job?
Mm-hmm.
And your job would be to look into Hillary Clinton, et cetera, et cetera. Not to be recusing yourself from Russia. And if you've recused yourself from Russia, well, then you have time to be doing the more important work. So not exactly a vote of confidence, again, to Jeff Sessions. And we've known for quite some time that he's not pleased with him.
All right. So he wants an investigation into Hillary. Why not? I mean, I think that would be pleasing to the base. People would like to know what happened in some of these scenarios. There's so many things that swirl around Hillary Clinton. All right, 629 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Here's your local news.
On the roof, it's as peaceful as can be. Oh, yeah. And there the world be, though it don't bother me. No.
All right. So what do you think should be done? Maybe you don't feel like you know enough about the situation, but here's the thing. This is a chessboard. The Democrats are taking it out. They're going after Trump and they're playing chess. And in the history, in American conservative history, you know, Republicans never defend themselves. I'll give you one example. Norm Coleman became a Republican and ran for Senate in Minnesota. And then on the reelection, he was ahead, but they asked for a recount. He was ahead by a couple, maybe, I think it was a couple hundred votes. All right. So the president was Bush. The governor was a Republican. And yet these guys just stood back as the Democrats recounted and recounted and recounted until they got enough votes to put in, what's the former comedian's name? The guy from Saturday Night Live. So Al Franken, Frankenstein. So they just let that happen. I mean, there was no logical reason for every recount to come up with a more Democratic votes. It was just absurd. And Norm Coleman, his career was ended. He was a good senator, but it just a typical situation where the president didn't want to be seen as meddling. He didn't send in the Justice Department. He didn't send in whoever. The governor of Minnesota didn't want to be seen as meddling or biased. So they handed away the control of the Senate. And so anyway, just I think it's good for Trump to be thinking strategically. Now, should he remove Sessions? I don't know. I don't know if he did. You know, Jeff Sessions has done some disappointing things, though, and has been very naive for a guy that's been all of his life in politics. But he put in a new. What if he put in a new attorney general and the attorney general, Rudy Giuliani, comes in and says, I'm not going to stop the Russia investigation. Well, let's just say I'm going to stop it. You know, Mueller and your team, you're free to go. You're fired. And there's nothing to see here. And that's the position that we're at right now. There has been no crime associated with Russia, and yet we're still investigating it. It's a total scandal. And this Mueller is just running off doing whatever he feels like. So bring in a new attorney general, have him fire him or replace him with somebody else that's not so biased. This is Jim Comey's best friend. All right, here is, got a couple of clips here. Here's Alan Dershowitz, one of the top legal scholars in America.
Like a battle between the White House and Special Investigator Robert Mueller is heating up. There's new evidence that there may be a conflict of interest among Mueller's staff.
Here's a breakdown of political donations from Mueller's team to Democrats. Just take a look at this, ranging from about $300 to $33,000. So the question is, does the White House have a right to get defensive here with this stake? It's Harvard Law Professor Alan Dershowitz. No one better to help break this down. Sir, great to have you.
Thank you.
So what do you make of that? I mean, how far do you think the Trump administration should and can go here?
Well, you know, they're playing the refs. That's what you do in basketball and in football. You attack the referee in some way, and you hope that it will impact their behavior. You know, if you say that the special counsel's lawyers are going to be biased, then maybe they'll have to lean over backwards to show they're not biased. Look, Bill Clinton did the same thing when Ken Starr was appointed. Right. They did very aggressive investigations of Ken Starr and his assistants to show how much they had given to Republican causes, how active they were among Republicans. Did it have an impact? I don't know, but lawyers do that all the time.
Well, and so then it dragged on for 7 years, and what the you bring up a great point about the Clinton administration and that Clinton time, right? Because the beginning started out as an investigation into Whitewater, end up being a nothing burger. Descended into Monica Lewinsky 7 years later. And that's what they're worried about here. And the Trump administration has said, if you start looking into our finances, that's when we're going to have a problem. Did they just kind of open a door for them to go looking at their finances?
Well, you know, obviously, when the police come to your house and try to search and you say to them, don't open that box.
Right. They go directly to the box.
Drawer. obviously, it's a clue. Now, you know, the problem with special counsel, I am not supportive of the appointment of the special counsel in general, is that it's Captain Ahab and the White Whale in Moby Dick. You give a guy one goal. Prosecutors generally have, you know, years to decide who to prosecute, what to prosecute. You give a prosecutor one goal and you give him a lot of money, you have him appoint a lot of lawyers, mm-hmm. it's unlikely he's going to want to come away with nothing, saying, I've done a complete investigation, there's nothing there. They're determined to get that white whale. And no matter what crime they find, if they don't find the original crime, they'll try to find another crime. They're going to try to find a link to crimes. Now, it's legitimate to look to see if there are major debts owed to Russian oligarchs. That's a legitimate inquiry. But a general search into his financial records to look for a crime is not right. It's the old Lavrenti Beria, Joseph Stalin, where Lavrenti Beria, the head of the KGB, says to Stalin, show me the man and I'll find you the crime. We don't want America ever to become a country where prosecutors are determined to find something on somebody and they will search every possible area until they come up with some crime against that person or people close to him. I just hope we're not moving in that direction.
We are obviously moving in that direction, but the question is, what can we do about it? Because, you know, I mean, get rid of Mueller. Here is Ben Stein.
I think he wants Jeff Sessions to resign. I think he wants him to be gone. And I think he then wants to fire the special prosecutor. Look, he has got a whole bunch of buzzards and other carrion animals that eat carrion looking over his shoulder. They want to kill him. I mean, Mr. Mueller, I'm sure he's a fine human being in many ways, but he's got that job because he wants to kill the political career and maybe take away the freedom of President Trump. He's not there for any other reason. Nobody takes that job, then hires 20 or 30 high-level Democrat prosecutors unless he's out to get the president. He's going to have to get rid of him eventually. He's going to have to get rid of Sessions. The whole idea of having a special prosecutor this early when there's no crime.
Are you saying the president should get rid of Robert Mueller? That'd be a bombshell.
Absolutely. It would be a bombshell, but I think it has to be done. I mean, Mueller has behaved in an extremely unprofessional way by having a deck stacked with so many left-wing Democrats and big-time Hillary contributors. That is not the way to run an impartial process. And there shouldn't have been a special prosecutor in the first place. Nothing bad happened.
Well, we
Nothing
don't know. Well, the process,
about,
well, the probes are not completed yet. I hear what you're saying. The market did fall.
All right, so take a little break here for weather and figure out a way to get rid of Mueller before he destroys government with his fake investigation. 641 Kelly O'Connell 523-1450 if you disagree. And we'll be right back. All right, so should we get rid of Jeff Sessions? Should he go do something else? And there's a movement out there to do that. And I do have a little clip for you here, but I've got to, reboot a little bit. My machine is stuck. But anyway, I've got for you a little clip here on this.
A scout is trustworthy. Loyal. We could use some more loyalty, I will tell you that.
And guess who wasn't a scout? That's right, Donald Trump. We have breaking news tonight. The Washington Post reporting that President Trump and his advisors are privately discussing the possibility of replacing Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The Post is also reporting that the president could install a new attorney general as a recess appointment during the August recess. That person would have the full powers of the attorney general until the end of the year. Joining us now by phone, Robert Costa, one of the reporters on tonight's new breaking news from the Washington Post. Robert, there's also contained in the report the notion that this is all in order to get a new attorney general to fire the special prosecutor and simply end that investigation. Does the White House and the president believe that that is possible?
That's important context, Lawrence. As I'm told by my top sources
around the president and in the Republican Party, the president continues to feel vulnerable on the Russia probe because of the recusal by Attorney General Sessions. And that feeling has prompted some of his closest confidants and associates to start mulling the possibility of replacing the Attorney General. They do not have a clear-cut plan at this moment about who that would be or what that would look like, whether it would be a recess appointment or not. But the president continues to vent behind the scenes, and these discussions are ongoing.
Robert, is it your sense that this is a deliberate running this idea up the flagpole, as it were, through the Washington Post, see what Washington's reaction is tomorrow, see what congressional Republicans' reaction is this week?
Yes, it's part of an ongoing process that's emanating from the White House. You have it in terms of the president's tweets. He's tweeting today about beleaguered attorney general.
It's emanating, folks. That sounds serious. All right. So a little bit on the mission creep of Mueller.
Trump administration will likely point to yesterday as a turning point. 10:31 a.m. Eastern time, to be precise. That's when Bloomberg News posted a story entitled Mueller Expands Probe to Trump Business Transactions. The story appeared a little over 12 hours after the president told the New York Times that Robert Mueller had no right to investigate his business transactions. Mueller, through Bloomberg, sent back the clearest possible message. Yes, I do, and I will. Now, what are those transactions? Well, basically, any commercial activity that Trump or his family or his associates conducted over the last decade that might pertain to Russia or anyone who has ever lived in Russia. According to Bloomberg, those would include Russian purchases of apartments in Trump buildings, Trump's involvement in a Soho development in New York with Russian associates, the 2013 Miss Universe pageant, which was held in Moscow, and Trump's sale of a Florida mansion to a Russian in 2008. That's right. The investigation created to determine whether the Russian government influenced the Trump-Hillary race now extends to the private sale of a house in Florida some Russian guy bought 9 years ago during the Bush administration. Talk about mission creep. Let's be clear about the politics here. This is a massive threat to the White House. A determined prosecutor can prove almost anything he wants. A prosecutor with no time limit or budget or accountability to voters, there is nobody more dangerous than that. Throw in Russia and all bets are off. Russia is a sketchy place. Virtually any financial transaction in that country could be construed as criminal by an American prosecutor out for blood.
All right. A part of a longer clip there, but the fact of the matter is Mueller is acting in a lawless way. He acts like he can do anything he wants. He used to be the head of the FBI, if I'm not mistaken. He should resign for his bias, his clear bias, or he should be fired because there's nothing good that's going to come out of this. We'll take a break and be back.
That's the only place I know. You can get the city, baby. Where you just have to make it so.
It's Kelly. It's Kelly. It's Kelly. It's Kelly. Who's this?
Made a small donation to the Trump campaign back in
19. I can't hear you.
Foreign exchange students stay with us. Am I involved?
I'll put you on hold.
My wife's going to be very upset. I give up the first place in the country. The woman's like, you have to serve. No service. Not the way. Wait for us. Where are you going? You know there are other people with you. I was born like this thing. I hear this is more shit. I want to talk to you about something. A couple weeks ago, President Barack Obama gave a speech in Northern Virginia, which he said, you didn't build it. He's talking about your business. And you all, you didn't build it. We built it. We built the roads.
And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, good morning, Kelly. This is Bill.
I can barely hear you, Bill. Bill, I can barely hear you. Speak up. I heard. Hold on. Bill, can you hear me?
And I made a small donation to the trunk here.
Okay.
Am I involved in this now?
Bill, I couldn't hear you. You're not. For some reason, I can't hear you. Your phone's not turned up very loud. I was kind of shouting your name while you're talking. What was your point again?
Can you hear me now?
No, it's the same volume. Just kind of sum it up for us.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, made a small donation to the Trump campaign, and we had a foreign exchange student stay with us from Russia back in 2000.
Okay.
I guess I'm involved too.
All right. Turn yourself in immediately.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. All right, folks, when you call in, if the phone is picked up, I'm on the other end. I don't know how to make it any simpler. But anyway, so Bill did the right thing. I told him I put him on hold. There's something has changed on my board. Now you can hear the you can hear music through it, whatever. Here's a little bit of Schiff's Riffs. Mark Schiff.
Hi there. This is Mark Schiff of Schiff's Riffs. And I want to talk to you about something that's very important. A couple of weeks ago, our President Barack Obama, gave a speech in Roanoke, Virginia, in which he said, you didn't build it. He was talking about your business that you own. You didn't build it. We built it. We built the roads. The government built the roads. So people get in their cars and they drive on these roads and they go to your business and they buy things, and you're a success because of other people, what they did, not because what you did. Because you got up 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning and turned the place on and gave people medical insurance. You didn't build it. They built it. But who goes in at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to take care of the things you do? You ever go to work and you see the government there helping out? What are they, elves? You never see this sort of thing. And if your business is a success, the government built it. But what about if your business is a failure, which 99% of businesses fail? Who built it then? Did the government build it? Do you hear Mr. Obama, President Obama, taking responsibility for building failed, you know, businesses? No, I don't think so. Now, you can go back even further about who built this thing. Maybe the government didn't build it. Maybe it's your babysitters when you were a kid. You were laying in the crib. Your parents went out for the night to go to the movies, and your babysitters watched you to make sure nothing happened to you. Because nothing happened to you, you got older, and you were able to start this business. So maybe your babysitters should get a little cut of the business. Let's go back even further. Maybe your parents, really, because who built you? Who built the business? Your parents built you. One night they got together, they had a little fun. You showed up 9 months later, so they built you. So maybe your parents should get half the business that you didn't build, that the government built, that they built, that the babysitters built. Who knows what's going on? Let's go back even further. Maybe God built the business. A lot of people go, God built my business. Have you ever showed up at work 6 in the morning and seen God there with a 2x4 knocking in nails, you know, with a hammer knocking in nails? I don't think so. And if you said God built your business, you're crazy. But President Obama says the government built it. He's not crazy. I want to talk about his lovely wife, too, Michelle Obama. She's a beautiful-looking woman. She's a great first lady. She goes around the world teaching people how to eat vegetables. But Michelle Obama has a big tush. Let me ask you something. Who built this tush? Did Michelle Obama build the tush, or did the government build the tush? Now, the government built the roads that the car would go on that she's sitting in. She drives to McDonald's, has some French fries. The tush gets bigger. Who's responsible for this tush? Did the government build it? And what happens if Michelle Obama shrinks the tush and loses weight? Who built it then? Because the government built the roads and she got in the car and drove to the health club and got on one of those machines and jumped up and down and the tush got smaller. Who built it then? Did the government or did Michelle Obama? These are big, big questions that need to be answered. Let me just tell you, if you have a business and you've been killing yourself for the last 20 years and it's a success, God bless you, you built it. So this is Mark Schiff for Schiff's Riffs. Please go to my website.
All right, folks. Now then, so the first hour we did talk about Jeff Sessions quite a bit and the Mueller investigation and some other things, 523-1450. If there's something you want to talk about, and had a call from Bill. Thanks for the call. And if you call in and there's a clip playing, be a little bit patient because as soon as the clip is over, I'll bring you on. I may not be able to hear you. You may not be able to hear me. But in any event, hopefully we'll get a little more rain today. It's supposed to be in the low 90s. So this period of time when there's a lot of rain, lovely. Monsoon season. I'll take you out here with a little James Taylor, another song by Carole King, Up on the Roof.
They put on a show for free. I wanna know by now, but darling, you can't share it all with me. That's what I said. I keep on telling you that right smack dab in the middle of town, I found a paradise.
Good morning. If you're just tuning in, 25th of July, it's 7:06, and we've got some stuff going on in D.C. where they're trying to figure out if Donald Trump would like Jeff Sessions to resign. Supposedly, Trump is thinking about bringing in Rudy Giuliani and or Ted Cruz. Now, if he brings in Ted Cruz, does Ted Cruz say to himself, I don't have a chance to run for president next time? Or does he say this is an opportunity of a lifetime? I think Ted Cruz would love to be the attorney general. I'm sure he'd be good at it. Let me get some headlines here for you. Besides that, Senate bracing for a healthcare showdown with McCain on hand, but a plan is unclear. How do you spend your entire last 10 years claiming, or 8 years, whatever it is, that you're going to repeal something, put a bunch of bills into place that all get shot down, and then when you finally get into power, you can't repeal it, you can't bring in something new? That's sad. I wonder how many of these people are doing this because they hate Trump. Never Trump's within the GOP, and we have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, good morning, Kelly. This is Marty.
Hey, Marty, how's it going?
I'm doing good, sir. Hey, yesterday morning you kind of asked a question about what people that you didn't think were, I don't know exactly how you asked it, but were kind of crazy against Trump until after the election.
Yeah.
Do you read the comic, the Sunday comic?
No. I don't.
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just want to point out that I had no idea how far left many of the comic strips are.
Yeah.
Prickly City, the Albuquerque Journal, just, oh my gosh, you know, like every third or fourth week they were just attacking Trump. Non sequitur by Wiley. I always kind of enjoyed that. In fact, it was my third favorite comic after Dilbert and Pearls Before Swine. Oh my gosh, I mean, this was last Sunday, just an entire attack on Trump and his supporters. And I'm just like, these are comics, man, that were kids. What are these guys doing? Like, they just gone over the edge.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just want to answer your question. I never.
Marty, can you hear me? Can you restate the question? It's, I guess it's something to do with the equipment because it's harder to hear people today than in the past. But could you restate the question so people know what you're answering?
Yesterday you asked what people do you know that you didn't think they were kind of crazy against Trump until after the election, and then they absolutely flipped. And I'm answering the question by saying several of my favorite comic strips, they used to be my favorite anyway. I had no idea that these writers of these comic strips were so far left wing.
All right, so this. Sorry, go ahead. Okay, Marty, thank you. Anything else?
Well, yeah, I wanted to comment. I guess you don't listen to the news that comes along on the hour.
What do you mean?
Well, I think you take a break. You go get a coffee or something. The news that just happened at 7 o'clock, CBS News, on your station. Absolutely. I mean, he started off just breathlessly reporting the cracks underneath Trump's feet on the thin ice.
I heard that.
That's how he started. I couldn't believe it. I actually switched over at 690. I cannot take CBS News. I mean, it's so quiet.
Uh-huh.
I just can't believe how they lined up against Trump. And I don't know. If someone like me who didn't even support Trump until the very end, I was a Cruz supporter, if I'm starting to come out and defend Trump as much as I am now because I see him as being persecuted, I think the media is starting to shoot itself in the foot. Your average working man can see what they're doing. All right. I know you got to go. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Marty. All right. Well, you know, I'm feeling very frustrated more than anything that I feel like the equipment is letting me down. It has long been stated to me that you can't hear when I talk to you. When you call in, you can't hear me back, which a lot of people have claimed that. But then there's other people who obviously hear. They hear and then they stop talking and respond. And there was a couple of things that I wanted to respond to Marty, but I don't think he could really hear me. But here's another call. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back. We have another call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
You've got to be kidding.
Hold on. I'll be right back. All right. Thanks for the call. Who's this?
This is Fred.
It's harder to hear. Could you speak up a little bit? But what's on your mind?
Tired of hearing many people here on the cable channels talking about our broken immigration system.
Okay.
I don't think it's broken at all. I think it's way too generous.
All right. So what exactly when they say it's broken? What are they getting at? Can you sum it up?
They're getting an amnesty. We want to forgive all the people who came here illegally, and I think that's wrong. The government. Not breaking up your family. You broke up your own family
right.
When you decided to cross the border.
Right. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to take in these people from these countries. There's no pressure put on the countries to make their country safer so their people don't have to leave.
Exactly. They don't care. They don't care that those people got killed in them in that semi truck down there. They encourage it. That's all about slave labor.
Yeah.
About bringing slave labor into.
Yeah. All right, Fred. Good point. Anything else? I got a couple more calls.
Nope, bye-bye.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
I just thought that call and mentioned just how tickled pink I am that everything is just going so south for you conservatives. I just thought I'd let you know that. I'm just so excited.
Anything else?
Nope, that's
Thank
it.
You. Thank you, Frankie, for another meaningless comment. All right, so getting back to Marty's call, I did want to really comment on it. Now I'm trying to remember his exact point, but all right, so I feel like that we got another call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell. Show who's this.
It's Ralph Kelly.
Hey, Ralph, what's up?
Oh, Kelly, this immigration statement that this gentleman just made is a correct. You know, I've come back a long ways. He's correct in the 30s.
Uh-huh.
During World War II, Kelly, there were no wetbacks here because they didn't want to go to the war. So schools closed here, public schools closed, so we could harvest the crops, pick cotton and all that. There were no wetbacks here. And we had no problems with the health like we have now, having to support half of the other nation's illegals in here. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you, Ralph. All right. So anyway, as some people have, you know, jumped on me, as somebody calls in to call and calls somebody a wetback, is it my job to correct them? You call in and make a statement. I mean, I believe in free speech. I'm not here to purify other people's thoughts, although I don't use that kind of language. I mean, I'd rather hear more free speech than less free speech. I'd like to know what people are really feeling without obscenities, of course. But anyway, so Marty is talking about this thing. All right. So the topic being all of these cartoonists that are after Trump. I think we're living in an age, and this is what you've seen that has happened. People wanted to know what would happen if we lost the rule of law. Well, I think that you're seeing it is we're living in a time when there's a romanticized view of politics, and there's this romanticism, the romantic movement, the individual who's kind of standing up against basically at that time they were standing up against the Enlightenment and the Scientific Revolution and the Industrial Revolution. So these individuals were standing up and undoubtedly in many cases expressing universal sentiments that life shouldn't be overly mechanized, there was inhuman treatment, that science came in and took away people's felt connection to the earth and everything. I understand that. And then you bring in Marxism, which puts out, I think, an attractive but a very false narrative, calling on people to stand up and throw off the chains and to fight back against the oppressors. The oppressors are the rich, of course, in this scenario. And you put these ideas together, and I think that's what you have today. These people who are getting up, all of these people in D.C., all of these people, all of the Democrats in D.C., all of the politicians, all of the journalists, all of the cartoonists think they're personally taking on Trump to save the world. It's sad that people don't think enough of their professions to want to do the profession instead of calling themselves out as rebels and heroes. We have another call. Thanks for the call. Who's this? Hey, Aaron, what's going on? Speak up a little bit. It's kind of hard to hear you today.
Okay. Over the last 10 years, I just have found it. I don't know the answer to this, but I don't understand why. I think without a doubt, America has lifted more people out of poverty, presented more opportunities to the human race than any other country had ever. Scientific advancements, individual freedoms, all this was created under our Constitution arrangement with together our system of government.
Okay, but Aaron, get to your point because I'm trying to follow you.
Okay, the thing I don't get is that why do people who have flourished in this environment want to change it? Why do we want to change
all right,
and create more government control, more freedom, more opportunity?
If this, if this is a question, it could be a rhetorical question, but my answer to you is that there is a movement out there. There's been a secularization. There has been it's kind of a degradation. What I'm talking about, what all this stuff that I'm talking about is kind of a degradation from what we used to be, our understanding of politics, our place in the world, our individual responsibilities, and the need for modesty. All of these people that are attacking Trump lack modesty. None of them seem to ask themselves, could I be wrong? The question that you're bringing up as well. I mean, you've got people that seem to be totally unmoored to history. They don't have any religious beliefs. They're secularists, and they don't care how much they've gained or the world has gained. They're angry, and they want to attack the system or capitalism or whatever because of its inequities. I mean, people are uneducated, and they're coming out, and they're just off the tether. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, when I hear Frankie get on and rant and rave, I question, well, what do you want, Frankie, that the United States of America has not provided? What do these people want out of life that isn't being provided? I mean, all we're guaranteed is the opportunity to have happiness and to seek our dreams, not the guarantee. So I just don't get it. I hope before this country crumbles, that enough Americans are starting to wake up to the fact that every time they give up a little bit of liberty, life is going to head in the wrong direction. So
yeah.
That's all I got.
Thanks, Aaron. Good points. All right. I mean, it's funny the day that you can't really hear anybody. Everybody's calling in, but apparently you can hear him well enough. But to Frankie, I mean, honestly, I hear somebody calls up and says, I'm glad the GOP is crumbling. I mean, I think highly enough of these kind of comments to even feel pity for somebody who thinks that way, because if you're willfully ignorant, you can bathe in it. You can, you know, exhilarate in your ignorance, you know. But there is this movement out there that is, it's anti-prog. It's okay. It's romanticism. What is the romantic movement? It is a celebration of the human spirit against science, against technology, against the modern capitalism. And so, I mean, everybody wants to be in touch with their emotions and in touch with nature and, you know, be fully alive and everything. I understand that romantic movement. Part of the romantic movement was also a reaction against tyranny, as you see in the life of Lord Byron. When he goes down to help the Greek resistance, he ends up getting cholera or typhoid or whatever and dies, but he's the quintessential romantic hero. You bring in this kind of exuberance and you put it in with Marxism, and it's a total mismatch, because Marxism is about controlling people and forcing them to do the right thing, which, you know, if you have to force people to do the right thing, is it even the right thing anymore? Is it right to force people to do the right thing? If so, then there's nothing wrong with Islam or Christianity forcing people to do the right thing, correct? I mean, if the methodology is two thumbs up. But I just think you've got all of these untethered and unhinged people in the media and in journalism, in the academy, in the university system, and they're all robots. They're all, you know, they're all puppets of one another. You know, it's you have a very boring puppet, so you make 10 million or 100 million copies of it. It's, you know, they all can finish each other's sentences. They all feel the same outrage. It's all derivative, though, right? I mean, aren't they just following a script? Have they ever had an original thought in their head? Do the cartoonists who are trying to destroy Trump, are they really expressing some novel theory, or are they just getting in line for the Democratic Party? What happens to this country if you're able to drive this person, Trump, out of office? You know, positive or negative, love him or hate him, what happens? The next president, if he's on the right, if he's a Republican, knows that he can't afford to take any risks because he'll be removed. And this is what the GOP is not considering. GOP largely hates Trump's guts. Why? If he's moving their agenda forward. Well, it's obviously not their agenda. or there's something more important than their agenda, which is control. I think the problem that Trump brings up in a fundamental way is he shows you that the stuff can get done the same way things are done in business. You can do things quickly, but in the political world, there's this sense that I've made 100 promises to get elected. I don't have to fulfill any of them because I'm a politician. I'll just do whatever I want, and then I'll run for election again, and nobody will bring up my broken promises, or people won't remember, or I'm an incumbent, so I get reelected. What Trump is bringing in is this idea that a government can be efficient. Now, he's got all of these people fighting against him, and it's an open question whether he can achieve what he wanted to when he came in. But he obviously has an idea for the country, and he's working on it. And in response to that, there is this angry crowd of Frankies that are out there biting on his ankles. I mean, it's pathetic. All right, 523-1450, and we'll be right back. Little James Taylor, Shower the People. Shower the people with your ignorance, Frankie. 523-1450, we'll be right back.
You can play the game and you can act out the part, so you know it wasn't written for you. Tell me, how can you stand there with your broken heart? Shame to play in the pool.
727. Flying those bumpy skies right now and waiting for Jeff Sessions, the other shoe to drop. You know where the term waiting for the other shoe to drop comes from, which is generally understood to mean waiting for more bad news or something unsettling. I looked it up. It has to do with New York tenements, the apartments built one underneath another and with thin walls, thin floors, no soundproofing. And so people would come home from work and take one shoe off, sit down on a bed, take one shoe off, let it drop. Then the person underneath is waiting for the other shoe to drop. So anyway, getting into what we're talking about at some level is the left devoid of ideas. What does the left stand for? I would argue the left is tribal. There's tribes. What does the pornographer have to do with the radical feminist? Nothing. I mean, radical feminists are totally opposed to the exploitation of females, right? What are pornographers stand for? The radical right, or the right to the radical exploitation of females. What do they have in common? They're both Democrats. So what is the unifying theme in the Democratic Party? What did it used to be? I don't know. Doesn't really matter, I guess. But what is it now? We're all going to fight for the right to have the things that we want. So now the Democrats reveal a new slogan. And it is a better deal, better skills, better jobs, better wages. That's pathetic. A better deal. Better skills, better jobs, better wages. What, am I opposed to these things? No. But it's stupid. I mean, is this better deal better than the New Deal? Because that's what it makes me think about. And does the left care about the economy and jobs? They're more interested in taxes and fighting against global warming. Now, Chuck Schumer says, that leader of the Democratic senators, we will unify the Democratic Party. We researched and talked to all kinds of different people. Again, pathetic. Don't you know what you stand for without researching? I rest my case. We'll take a break here. 523-1450-730.
One thing can lead to another. It doesn't take any sacrifice. Oh, Father and Mother, Sister and Brother, if it be the night.
I've gotten some positive feedback on Jordan Peterson, a guy I could not listen to enough. I just find him fascinating. Here's a little bit on political tribalism.
About this is really useful.
And this is exactly what we're talking about right now. But aren't you sick and tired of people misusing their positions? I mean, this is a talk show. It's my job description, get up and give my opinion, ask questions, make statements, editorialize. Aren't you sick of people misusing their political positions and their journalistic careers and their academic tenures to get up and politic, which is by definition politics? A political stand is to take a place on a political line from left to right. People all get up and they're so naive that they're convinced that they're right. Therefore, whatever they feel is good. It's a very dangerous idea. It's not an opinion. That would be interesting. Get up and give an opinion and argue it. Then people could accept it or reject it. These actors in Hollywood, these journalists getting up and making all kinds of assumptions and just trying to give you their conclusions and wanting to have you just accept them by virtue of the power of their position. Here's Jordan Peterson, political tribalism.
As far as I'm concerned, you might want to think about this politically. And we've been doing a lot of work. I'm going to have one of my graduate students actually come and talk to you about the work we've been doing on personality and political belief. So what happens with political belief is that if you're high in openness and low in conscientiousness, you tend to be a liberal, the openness being the particularly important part of that. And if you're low in openness and high in conscientiousness, especially orderliness, you tend to be a conservative. Now, it's kind of strange because openness and conscientiousness aren't very highly correlated. So it's not obvious why those two traits would combine to determine political belief. And the relationship is actually quite strong between temperament and political belief if you measure political belief comprehensively. But it seems to me that the fundamental distinction, and this is the political game, at least along the liberal conservative axis, is boils down to one thing. It boils down to how open borders should be compared to how closed they should be. And, you know, you can see that reflected, for example, in the attractiveness of Trump to a large part of the general population, because he's going to close the borders, build a wall, and fortify the borders. And conservatives like that. They like to have borders between things stay tight. And they don't even care if it's state borders or political borders or town borders or ethnic borders or borders between ideas or borders between sexual identities. Conservatives like to have things stay in the damn box where they belong, partly because they're orderly and partly because they're low in openness. They don't get any real, they're not interested in what happens if you free up your conceptions. All they see in that is the probability of disorder. Whereas liberals, who are high in openness and low in conscientiousness / orderliness, they get a real charge out of letting things out of the box so that they can creatively interplay. Now, the issue is, who's correct? And the answer is, you don't know, because the environment underneath the political landscape moves. And so sometimes the right answer is tighten up the borders and fortify. And sometimes the right answer is no, loosen things up because everything's getting too static and tight and we need more information. And the dialogue that occurs in the political landscape, this is why dialogue is so important, is fundamentally between these two opposing views of borders. And because you can't say with certainty which one is right at any given time, an open dialogue has to maintain itself so that the entire political state can maneuver properly along that moving line. It's absolutely crucial. It's really, really, really useful to know that people vote their damn temperament. It gives you more of an understanding, at least in principle, of those who sit on the other side of you on the political fence. And there's been recent newspaper articles, quite interesting. I tweeted a couple of them about this company and UK called Cambridge Analytics, and they're using the damn Big Five. They can extract out Big Five information from your Facebook likes. They've got a model of every single person in the United States Big Five personality, and they help Trump craft political messages right down to the level of apartment buildings to appeal to people based on their Big Five temperament. And that's all recent work. And so one of the things that's very interesting is we are teaching computers to understand us so fast you can't believe it. And we really do risk walking into an electronic world where you will only see what you want to see. I mean, obviously, the marketers are trying to do that as fast as possible, right? They only want to send you ads. that you're going to be interested in, because it's expensive and foolish to send you anything that will annoy you or that you'll ignore. And so the marketers are trying like mad to map who you are, even by watching your eyes. They're trying to figure out who you are so they can send you the right information. But the danger is that that'll happen, say, in the domain of news and broader information, increasing this tendency for people to be siloed in their exposure to the external world. It's a big, it's sort of like each of us is becoming a micro celebrity surrounded by electronic sycophants who do nothing but tell us exactly what we want to hear. It's a real problem. Karl Popper, a famous philosopher of science, said that one of the things that you should do, and this is akin to the Piagetian view, is you should always look for information that contradicts your current viewpoint. Now, that's painful, right? Because who wants their axioms contradicted? It can take you apart. But it's the only way that you can ensure that you're learning at the same time that you're maintaining your stability. And that's another reason why it's really necessary to engage in dialogue with people that you do not agree with, because they're the ones who will tell you things that you don't know. It's of crucial importance in the maintenance of your own stability. The worst thing that can happen to a person, no, because there's many horrible things that can happen to a person, but one of the worst things that can happen is that you find yourself in a situation where no one is offering you corrective feedback anymore, because you rely on the corrective feedback provided by other people to keep yourself sane, to keep moving in the ever-changing environment. And if you cut yourself off from that feedback, then you end up static and shrinking. It's really not good. You get less and less competent, you get less and less confident, and the threats outside of you loom larger and larger.
All right, so I have an application for this. When I go on to Amazon and I look for a book, well, any product, I go to the reviews, but what do I look for? I only look for the negative reviews. I only read the negative reviews. Why? Because a lot of people in America, and I was actually going to do a segment on this, but I guess I'll do it tomorrow, on the danger of niceness. In America, we've convinced ourselves we have to be nice, which is very dangerous, in my opinion, if that's your highest value. But most people, you know, if you go into a restaurant and you get served, how's the food, you're expected to say, oh, it's delicious. Now, I've gotten in the habit of saying something that the server or the owner or whatever, the manager, comes up, how's your meal? Not bad, could be worse. They totally freak out. I mean, how dare you say something like that? Which is fundamentally true, right? I mean, in any meal, it could be worse, unless it's just garbage, unless it's dog food. But in any event, I read the negative reviews because that's where the information that you need to know whether you should buy this product or this book. So 742-523-1450, we'll be back.
Shower the people you love with love. Show them the way that you feel. Things are gonna work out fine.
Seven forty-four. 25th of July. Now, here's a little bit exactly what I'm talking about. What does the Democratic Party stand for? Seriously. Abortion, gay rights, against global warming, against capitalism, open borders. And more than anything, they hate Trump's guts. Is that enough to get elected on? Here's Chuck Schumer, the leader of the Senate Democrats.
And we are back with the Senate Democratic leader, Chuck Schumer. Senator, thank you for joining us this morning. You saw that poll we put up just during the break. 52% of Americans think Democrats only stand against President Trump, don't know what you stand for. Why don't Americans know where the Democrats stand for, and is that your fault?
Well, it is in part our fault. When you lose an election with someone who has, say, 40% popularity, you look in the mirror and say, what did we do wrong? And the number one thing that we did wrong is we didn't tell people what we stood for. Even today, as your poll showed, they know we're standing up to Trump. They like that. But they want to know, what do you stand for? So tomorrow, Democrats will unveil our economic agenda. It's called a better deal. It has three components. We're going to raise people's wages and create better paying jobs. We're going to cut down on their everyday expenses they have to pay, and we're going to give them the tools they need to compete in the 21st century. So simply put, what do Democrats stand for? A better deal for working families, higher wages, less costs, tools for the 21st
century.
Again,
though, for 8 years, you had control of Congress for part of that time. What took so long, and why didn't it happen during the campaign?
Well, I don't know why it didn't happen in the campaign. We all take blame, not any one person. But now we have spent a lot of time working on this, and it's going to really impress the American people. It is not going to be left or right. It is going to be totally focused on working people who realize, believe correctly, that the system is rigged against them and not helping them with all the changes, rapid changes, economic.
Isn't that leftism by definition? Isn't it?
Social. And people ask, well, are you going to appeal to the Obama coalition, you know, young people, LGBT, people of color, or the Trump people, Democrats who voted for Trump, blue-collar voters? This will appeal to both.
But I have
it will unify the Democratic Party because we are united on economic issues and a bold.
What is the position of Democrats on economic issues other than the fact that they're opposed to capitalism? I'm serious. I'm not trying to provoke anybody. I mean, if you feel provoked, 523-1450. I mean, Frankie already shot his wad, so he's laying back in bed with his baby bottle full of Jameson's Irish whiskey. Thanks for supporting the old country, my friend. But what do Democrats stand for on the economy? I mean, Democrats or liberals will do any kind of crazy number of things to shut down. Look at this town. Half the or a quarter of the people underneath the poverty line, quarter of the people just above the poverty line. And you're telling me that this is a no-growth area. So basically, you're telling one half of the population you don't have a right to a better-paying job to rise yourself out of poverty. To me, that's what the Democratic Party stands for. There's always something bigger and more important than the economy, like global warming. And, all right, so let's take our last break here. A new report has come out saying that cash can make you happier, but it's because of time. You use the money, the extra money you have, to pay people to do things for you, which saves you time, and that brings you more life satisfaction. The moon's interior could contain lots of water. Study shows, according to space.com, ancient volcanic deposits on the moon reveal new evidence about the lunar interior, suggesting it could contain a lot of water. From satellite data, scientists from Brown University studied lunar pyroclastic deposits, that is, fire-created rocks, layers of rock that likely formed from large volcanic eruptions. The magma associated with these explosive events carried to the moon's surface from very deep within its interior. Previous studies observed traces of water ice in shadowed regions at the lunar's pole. If you can follow that. So they think that inside of this body, this planet, this moon, there could be a lot of water. And so anyway, it reminds me, well, here's a quote. We observe the water in deposits that are on the surface. These deposits are the result of magma originally coming from deep within the lunar interior. Therefore, because the products of the magma have water, the deep interior of the moon must also contain water. And that reminds me of something that is true about the Earth, which is that there is a supposed to be an enormous amount of my machine just froze up. Enormous amount of water inside the Earth. One study said that it was up to 30 times as much water that is on the surface, and you might be shocked by that, but you know, the surface water, although massive, is only a tiny portion of the entire size of the Earth. So this substance called ringwoodite, I believe, was discovered inside of a diamond. And I've got a little clip here for you. I know why this machine keeps locking up on me, but undoubtedly related to too many windows open. But all right, so here we go. Just a second here. Here it is. We discovered a massive amount of water near the Earth's core. This is from Seeker.com.
What's big and wet and located 400 miles beneath the United States? Hey, everyone. I'm Karen for DNews. And today we're talking about what could be the largest water reservoir ever discovered on planet Earth. Actually, it's in the Earth, and it's not really liquid water, but I'll get to that. Scientists from Northwestern University and the University of New Mexico have made the astonishing announcement that there appears to be oceans worth of water stored in the Earth's mantle approximately 400 miles underneath most of the interior of the U.S. It's long been speculated that water is trapped in the transition zone, or the area between the upper and the lower mantle layers of our planet, and scientists have actually been looking for it for decades. This work, published in the journal Science, provides the first direct evidence of it. So what is this evidence exactly? I mean, the deepest holes we've been able to dig are mines in Canada and South Africa that are around 2.5 miles beneath the Earth's surface. We're talking about going much, much deeper than that. What researchers have found are actually deep pockets of magma, which is a clear indicator that water is present too, although not in the liquid, solid, or gas forms that we're familiar with. This is actually a fourth form of water where the hydrogen and oxygen are trapped in the molecular structure of minerals in the rocks. We're talking about enormous pressures here. Think about the weight of hundreds of miles of solid rock. So the high pressure combined with the extremely high temperatures that you find closer to the Earth's core cause these water molecules to split off and form hydroxyl radicals that then bind to the crystal structures of the minerals surrounding them. This discovery proves that it is possible for water from the Earth's surface to be driven down to great depths through the processes associated with plate tectonics. And these findings will provide scientists with a greater understanding.
All right, it also proves that there was probably water inside the Earth, undoubtedly, a long time ago. But here is Schiff's Riffs, Don't Raise a Wimp. And this is Mark Schiff.
Schiff's Riffs. And I want to talk to you about the way kids are raised these days as opposed to when I was raised. When I was raised, I had nothing, nothing at all. My parents, I got a quarter a week allowance. If I asked my parents for another quarter, they'd say, what did you do with the quarter I got you last week? My parents, the only reason they had me is so they had somebody to take out the garbage. And I loved taking out the garbage because there was nothing in the house to do, nothing in my room. My room was like, it was like an empty warehouse. I had a TV set. It was like the screen was this big. I needed a magnifying glass to look at the screen. There was no sound on this TV, no sound. My mother actually said to me, learn to lip read. I had a suit. My parents got me a suit to wear when I was 6 years old. 6 years old, they got me this beautiful suit. I wore the same suit to my high school graduation. If I asked my parents to drive me anywhere, just to drive me to my friend's house, they go, what are you, crazy? What are your legs, broken? I said, yeah, but he lives in Cleveland. It's 1,400 miles. Either walk or don't go. Nowadays, it's like, if a kid licks a stamp, the mother will call poison control. Look at him. He got stamp glue on his tongue. Get him some water. Boil something. Call an ambulance. Look at him there. They get him a new car, their first car. A car. they get them, like, the first car a kid gets now is like a $90,000 BMW. They smack it up an hour. If they get it, they get them another one. If a kid has to go to the toilet, the mother takes him in and puts him on the toilet seat. She goes, Johnny, just sit there. Just relax. Here's the Wall Street Journal. Look at it. One day you'll have a great job. Don't squeeze too hard. You'll get an aneurysm. Relax your bowels. Relax the bowels.